Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, May 22nd, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Glad to have you with us. On today's show, Charlene Miller and Alan Akiyama will give us an update on the Meals on Wheels program. Deborah Bear from the Grateful Dogs of Juno will highlight Saturday's glass pickup at Sandy Beach. And we'll talk with Catherine Heumann about plans for the new Jack. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 53 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The head of Canada's Commission of the Investigation into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women has admitted to some delays. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, she says it's more of a communications failure than anything else.
Marion Buller was responding to concerns that were outlined in an open letter from advocates, Aboriginal leaders, and the families of victims. That said, the inquiry process is in serious trouble. The group says it's aware of the challenges before the commission and is urging immediate action to change the current approach and to move the process along faster. Some families have complained that the news media get information before they do. Buller says the commission accepts full responsibility.
Poor communications with the public and with the families as well. We fully acknowledge that and take responsibility for it, and we've taken important steps to correct that shortcoming or that weakness.
Buller also says a lot of work has already been done behind the scenes. She says she also understands the frustrations of those who have been waiting up to 40 years for answers. But she says it's important to move carefully over fears of re-traumatizing people. She says it is a concern that she and other commissioners live with daily and take seriously. Buller says she still expects the commission's first report to be released in November. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The border town of White Clay, Nebraska has long been known as the primary location to buy alcohol for people on the nearby Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. But as Jim Kent reports, the closure of the four beer stores on May 1st has resulted in a new outlook for the communities.
More than 50 people gathered in White Clay, Nebraska last Friday to lay the groundwork for moving forward to create a new town that isn't identified as the source of alcohol for the Lakota people from Pine Ridge. Politicians, community members, Oglala Sioux tribal members, Economic Foundation representatives, and entrepreneurs met as part of the White Clay Task Force to plan a new future for the town.
I know the people had tried before to try to get everybody to come together.
Nebraska State Senator Patty Panzing Brooks has been instrumental in creating this opportunity.
A year ago, when I told people that I was going to start working on this, people said, oh my gosh, we've worked on that, we've done so much, there's nothing you can do. And I just thought, well, that may be true, but I haven't tried it.
Panzing Brooks worked with fellow state senator Tom Brewer in Oglala, Lakota. They eventually received unanimous legislative support to set up a task force to change the face of this Nebraska panhandle town. Sam O'Rourke is an Oglala businessman.
You know, this is just the beginning stages. And what needs to happen here is we need to create positive economic development.
O'Rourke notes that the possibility of turning White Clay into a real town with a mayor, a city council, and maybe even law enforcement is what sparked his interest to invest in what until now was a community known only for its beer stores. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Cheyenne River Sioux Chairman Harold Frazier is being recognized by Lakota people for his leadership. Frazier is widely known as an advocate for tribal sovereignty and continues work against the Dakota Access Pipeline. He was a strong supporter of pipeline opposition camps in North Dakota. Frazier was honored with an eagle feather bonnet during a ceremony Friday in South Dakota. The gift acknowledges his leadership to protect the environment, water, and Lakota people. The bonnet was a gift from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. It's rare to earn an eagle feather bonnet outside of military actions. According to the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, the warriors agreed Frazier has shown bravery and concern about the well-being of people. Tribal leaders say the struggle to defend the Great Sioux Nation is never ending. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting science, technology, and engineering careers through a partnership with the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon on Monday, May 22nd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host today, and in the studio now is Charlene Miller. She is the Meals on Wheels coordinator for Catholic Community Services, and also Alan Akiyama. He's a Juno Senior Center Advisory Council member. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to have you here. Meals on Wheels, why don't you give us an overview, Charlene? What's it look like here in Juno?
Meals on Wheels, well, we deliver meals to people that are homebound and can't get out and shop for themselves, and we also have meals that we serve Monday through Friday down at the Mountain View Senior Center, congregate meals where people can come down and have a lunch and socialize with other folks. And we also do meals that we send over to the Methodist Church in Douglas and to the Bridge Center.
And you're under the umbrella of Catholic Community Services, is that right?
That's correct. Yes, we are.
And where is all of this great food cooked?
It's cooked down at the Mountain View Senior Center. We lease the kitchen and cafeteria down there.
And remind us where that is?
It's on 10th Avenue, 12th Avenue, 12th Street.
Okay. And you need volunteer drivers,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Yes, we do.
Tell us about an hour in the life of a Meals on Wheels driver.
Oh, it's an exciting day. You come in and you pick up your meals and you take them out and you deliver them to people who just can't get out on their own. We have a lot of handicapped people that really rely on this meal to be there for them every day. And, yeah.
And I think last time you were on the show, you were telling me that sometimes the Meals on Wheels person is the only connection those individuals may have in a day.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And we're kind of a welfare check, too. You know, if somebody falls or if something happens to them, we come by every day to see, you know, that they're okay. And we had somebody today that wasn't there, so I got a hold of her daughter and just said, hey, you might want to go make sure your mom's okay.
Okay, so for volunteers, our listeners, we're recruiting right now, right?
We are, yes.
Okay, you probably need to be able to drive.
You right? do need to be able to drive, yes.
What else?
We need to have insurance on your vehicle so that you are covered, and we just ask that you come in and do a background check, and they'll run your fingerprints, and you'll be ready to go.
Okay.
You know, we have very few people that are turned away.
And how much or how little can you work in a week?
You can be a permanent driver where you work once a week for about an hour, or you could be a sub, which I can really use right now. So if somebody's sick or somebody's on vacation, I can call you up and see if you can drive, and you can say yes or no. And
you go in around 11 a.m. to pick up food or something?
Yeah, about 11:15, 11:30. Yeah.
And then you deliver till like 1, something like that?
No, we try to get the meals delivered between noon and 1.
Okay.
You know, and most routes don't take an hour. We do have a couple that are a little longer. Yeah, take about an hour. But on general, it's about 45 minutes and you're done.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll come back to this in just a minute and get the number and everything where people can call to become Meals on Wheels volunteers. Alan, what's going on at the Juno Senior Center, and what's the advisory council thinking about these days?
Well, Scott, we're doing another fundraiser. We're having our first annual Memorial Day / end of school ice cream social on Memorial Day, May 29th, from 1 to 3 in the afternoon at the Juno Senior Center, which is 895 West 12th Street, the corner of 12th Street and Eden Drive. And the tickets are $8 for adults and $5 for children under 12, or $25 for a family of four. And all the proceeds that are raised go to benefit the Senior Nutritious Program, which does Meals on Wheels. as well as the noonday meals.
Okay, so Senior Center, a week from today, from 1 to 3 in the Senior Center, across from Harbor View and across from the harbor there, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yes.
1 to 3. Mm-hmm. And what kind of ice cream will be people eating that day?
Well, we've been very fortunate that Mark Wheeler from Copa is making up the ice cream for us. So, he's, of course, we have to have the vanilla ice cream if you have an ice cream social. But he also asked the Harborview school children to suggest a different flavor, and they came up with coffee and donuts as the second flavor that we'll be serving. And for the toppings, Mark is going to provide whipped cream, nuts, hot fudge, and cherries.
I think it's probably obvious, but who should go to this, Alan, on Monday?
Well, we're hoping that all the families will bring their children and come out and get a nice midday ice cream fix.
Sounds great. And thinking of the Senior Center in general, are you in need of volunteers down there?
We're always looking for members who would be interested in joining our advisor council. We meet only once a month on the second Friday of every month from 1 to 2 p.m. at the Juneau Senior Center. And our chairman of the senior council tries to keep our meetings to an hour or less, so it's not too much time commitment. We do take a break over the summer because people are traveling on vacations or they've got other things to do during summer. So we aren't meeting in June or July, but we'll be meeting starting second Friday in August.
Okay, so that's the council. What about at the Senior Center itself? Is there a need for volunteers down there? You know, I'm thinking of this ice cream social on Monday. It's probably going to be a great way for people to interact with the seniors who live there. Are there more opportunities for people to do that here in Juneau?
There's always opportunities for people to help out in the community, not only seniors, but if you want to help out young children as well. The Senior Center Advisory Council mainly is there to help out with the seniors at the Senior Center. Again, if you're looking to help out, just come on down to Ice Cream Social. We'll push your work, serving ice cream or helping clean up.
Oh, great. Sounds good, Alan. Okay, back to Meals on Wheels. Charlene, if somebody is interested and wanted to learn more about it, how can they do that?
They can give me a call at 463-6179. Again, that's 463-6179. And I can get them an application and point them in the right direction.
And about how many lunches does one? You don't do dinner, too, or do you?
No, we just do lunch Monday through Friday.
About how many lunches does one deliver on average, would you say?
Average, I'd say 8.
Okay, so you could do this in like a sedan. Probably you don't need like a van or anything.
No,
like that,
no, you
right?
can do it in a little car. Yeah, no, you're fine.
Okay, Charlene, is there anything else that you'd like to add about Meals on Wheels?
Just that it's a really beneficial program. I think the seniors really appreciate it. You know.
Okay, Alan, anything else? See you on Monday at the Ice Cream Social.
Yes, just again, date and time. It's Monday, May 29th. 1 to 3 p.m. at the Juneau Senior Center, corner of 12th and Egan Drive. And we hope to see you all there.
All right. That was Alan Akiyama. He's a council member on the Juneau Senior Center Advisory Council, and also Charlene Miller. She's the Meals on Wheels coordinator for Catholic Community Services. Thanks you both for coming on the show.
Thank you, Scott.
Strange. Surely you're not happy now, you know. me all kinds of advice designed to enlighten me. When I tell them that I'm doing fine, watching shadows on the wall, don't you miss the big time, boy, you're no longer on the ball. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the merry-go-round.
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917, representing Allstate, Safeco, Progressive, as well as a variety of other carriers. 789-5900.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, May 22nd, 2017. It's about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and in the studio now is George Udermull, and he is a member of the Grateful Dogs of Juno since 2005, George tells me. Welcome to the show, George.
Thank you very much.
So 2005, back then, George, what inspired you to become a member of Grateful Dogs of Juno?
The organization formed in 2005 in response to an effort by the City and Borough of Juneau to kind of develop some more advanced regulations on dogs and to kind of require more on-leash areas and things like that. So the responsible dog owners of the community got together and formed Grateful Dogs as kind of an advocacy voice to speak on behalf of responsible dog owners and to ensure that there's an opportunity for dog owners to be able to have places to take their dogs.
You're like friends of the dogs kind of a organization.
That's right, the voice for the dogs.
Okay. So it formed in 2005. This Saturday, you're going to be doing an event at Sandy Beach. Tell us about that.
Yes, this coming Saturday from 9 to 11, we'll be conducting a broken glass pickup at Sandy Beach. This will be the 11th year we've done that activity. It's in response to these. If you've walked Sandy Beach or spent much time down there, you'll see there's quite a bit of glass spread the whole length of the beach from the parking lot all the way out to the cave-in site. And it's if you spend much time out there, you see how dangerous that glass can be. So we've gotten together over the last several years and just kind of tried to address that issue by going out there in a kind of concentrated effort, a number of individuals and volunteers, to pick up as much glass as we can in one day.
And from what I've seen of the weather, it's going to be beautiful this weekend.
Yes, the forecast is for good weather, a 10% chance of rain, a temperature maybe in the 60s, and we're going to hold the weatherman to that.
Okay, guaranteed. So this is from 9 to 11 a.m.?
Yes.
Okay. What else have you all been up to this spring?
Grateful Dogs have been fairly busy. I mean, since Christmas, at Christmas time, we hold our annual pet food drive, And we, over a week's period, we collected about 1,600 pounds of pet food, which goes to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. And we've been providing that to them over the last couple of months.
Huh. Interesting. I don't know that many people knew that the food bank distributed pet food as well.
Yes. And it's an ancillary to their primary mission to provide for food. But all the people who need food at the food banks, many of them have pets, and their pets need food, and they need wholesome pet food, feeding them. People food isn't really the answer. So there is a substantial demand through the food bank to provide pet food. And so you get a chance to speak to Darren out there at the food bank, and he can tell you how great the demand is for pet food by clients of the food bank.
Okay.
And in addition to that, this spring, each year, as an activity, we do a number of cleanups, poop scoops in the area, because that period between February and April, everything that's accumulated on the trails, it kind of comes to the surface, and it looks really bad. And so we do our effort to kind of clean up that effort and kind of start with the spring cleaning.
Remind me, you may have said already, about how many of you are there?
The organization varies pretty much from about 20 to 30 paid members. We have a much larger following.
Paid members?
Yes.
Wow. Tell us about that.
Membership in Grateful Dogs, it's just a kind of a token membership fee of $10 per year, just to make sure, get a commitment, and so we can get contact information and keep in contact with you so that you can participate in the activities we hold.
Okay. You've mentioned responsible dog owner a few times and that you're a group of those. How would you describe a responsible dog owner?
A responsible dog owner is, first of all, one who takes good care of his dog, provides for his health, his food, his shelter. He trains his dog, picks up after his dog, any number of things, just to be responsible. And also recognizing his role in the community, because we are just one of many groups out there, and so we have to share the community with others, particularly in the area of roads and trails and things like that. So we're kind of joint users, and we have to be respectful of other users and encourage and kind of educate other users how to deal with us and how to work with us out of doors.
Sure. What are, like, the technical dog – what's technical dog etiquette on a place like, let's say, Sandy Beach? And then let's go to maybe a trail.
Well, Sandy Beach, first of all, any place you go, the first thing to do is know what the rules are in place. And then the next is to keep keep an eye on your dog. If it's an off-leash area, keep a watch on your dogs. Keep your dog close as the circumstance requires. And also, the hardest part is kind of to pay attention, to look ahead, anticipate situations that may arise, which may cause you maybe to bring your dog in closer, or there's something to be aware of whether it's people approaching on a bicycle or a baby carriage, things like that, or joggers are on the trail. Just kind of those things that you need to be aware of so you can anticipate situations and kind of manipulate yourself and your dog out of the way so that there's no adverse encounters.
Okay. If somebody wanted to become part of the Grateful Dogs, would Saturday be a good way to come meet you and your colleagues?
That would definitely be a great way to come and meet and participate in and join in Grateful Dogs.
And is this a dog-friendly event on Saturday?
Certainly. If you can handle two things at once, if you can walk with your dog and pick up glass, which is what most of us do because we're out there every day of the week doing this exact same thing, it's definitely a dog-friendly event.
Okay, if people want more information, George, where should they go?
Certainly, you can find us on Facebook under Grateful Dogs of Juneau, and we also have a web page, www.gratefuldogsofjuneau.org.
All right, George Udermull, is there anything we missed? Anything you'd like to add?
No, I just want to encourage everyone out there to be a responsible dog owner, to watch over your pets, to clean up after your pets, and to ensure that you and your neighbors have a good experience while you're out of doors.
All right, George, thank you. We'll see you at Sandy Beach on this Saturday from 9 to 11. Thank you.
Thank you.
Busy. He's a happy dog. rhythmic dog, harmonic dog, house dog, street dog, dog of the world unite, dancing dog. Funky dogs, nasty dogs.
Bird note. On a fine May morning in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, a song issues from within a rhododendron thicket, but try as you may, you can't see the singer. It sounds like a warbler. Many breed in this lush mountain habitat, black-throated blue warblers, for example. American redstarts and hooded warblers. But no, it's a Swainson's warbler, one of North America's shyest birds. Small and brown, these birds forage quietly on the ground, flipping over leaves to expose and capture insects. They scurry away, calling an alarm when big-footed humans invade their shadowy habitat. They're amazingly good at disappearing in rapid flight through the tangled understory. On their wintering grounds, in the Blue Mountains of Jamaica, they're even harder to find because they don't sing in winter. There, instead, you might hear a rufous-throated solitaire singing in the dense mountain forest. Swainson's warblers do, however, respond aggressively to a recording of their own song. That's how ornithologists confirmed the presence of these elusive warblers and discovered a vital connection between the two mountain forests 1,000 miles apart. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 22nd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, right at the bottom of the hour. And in the studio with me now is Atsi Nasia. She's the Prevention and Outreach Director with AWARE. Welcome to the show, Atsi.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone, that's not the right slider. This is, though, it sounded good for a second, right? Joining us by phone is Lee Giordano. He's the Director of Training for Men Stopping Violence. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Hi, Scott. Thanks.
It's nice to have you here. Atsi, tell us about this conference coming up, this training.
AWARE and the Juno Violence Prevention Coalition are thrilled to bringing Men Stopping Violence to Juneau, Alaska. Men Stopping Violence is a national organization that's based in Georgia, and they have an incredible history of engaging thousands of men as allies in prevention, working with men that have interest and longing in making their world and relationships safer, and intervening with men that use violence, supporting all men to unpack patriarchy and violence and safety for our mothers, our daughters, our sons. So we are so excited. It's going to be a 3-day training coming up June 19th through the 21st. At the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall. And not only do we have Lee, but we also have Langston Walker, who's the Director of Prevention with the Georgia Network to End Sexual Assault. So two pretty amazing national trainers coming up north.
Okay, well, we're looking forward to having you up here, Lee. Hopefully it'll be beautiful from the 19th to the 21st. Lee, can you tell our listeners a little bit about some of the things you talk about?
Sure. So Men Stopping Violence has been doing our work for 35 years. Our mission is to organize men to end male violence against women. And so at this training, we're really going to bring all of our promising practices and our expertise and experience and try to transfer it to the participants. So the training is actually broken into two parts. Part of it will be prevention focused. So we're going to be working with people from the Juneau area and I think from throughout Alaska to train them in how to engage men. How do you talk to men about male violence against women? How do you get them excited about working in their communities and influencing their cultures and other community members? And so at Men Stopping Violence, we train on a philosophy of community accountability. And so what that means is if we ever want to make violence against women be less prevalent in our communities, then we need the whole community involved because the community has a stake or has responsibility for perpetuating some of the beliefs and some of the norms that lead to violence against women. So at this training, we're going to be trying to address all of that.
Okay, and I'll ask you the same question in a second, Lee, but let's start with you, Atsi. Who would benefit from going to this conference?
We deeply believe that all men would benefit. And we all are impacted by a culture that encourages and normalizes men's violence against women. And whether you are a man or a woman, you love men and women in your life. And so we are dedicated to really gathering as many people from across Alaska and across Juneau together to really think deeply together about how we can bring this accountability model to life and how, as a community, we can create healing, create pockets of support, accountability, and unpack some of these thinking errors that we've inherited from this patriarchal society.
What would you add to that, Lee?
Just a little bit. So I think we're looking for anyone who wants to learn more about getting involved in ending violence against women, particularly people who have access to men and boys. So teachers or service providers, people who work in nonprofits, faith leaders, is another good category. Anyone who has influence over men or anyone who wants to work in their community to end violence against women. So we're gonna start with, in the training we'll have basic information about generally why people should be working to end violence against women, but we'll also deepen people's understanding of the work who have already been engaged in some sort of prevention or intervention work. So it'll have something for all levels of understanding of the issue.
And just to jump in, so we are calling out to social service providers, policymakers, tribal leaders, teachers, coaches, advocates in the field of domestic violence or sexual assault. And we also really want the larger community to know, as fathers, as brothers, as mothers, that you are invited as well.
Okay. Again, this question may go out to both of you. What's something that, an example, one technique maybe, Lee, that you like to teach? What's something that maybe the everyday man is not aware of how he may promote violence, even if it's in a very indirect way?
Yeah, one of the most basic things that we'll talk about is just our typical understanding of masculinity and femininity. And so in our training, we'll talk about how things that we teach young men, things that I was taught and probably you were taught, Scott, as a boy, about being tough or not showing your emotions, actually is one of the reasons why violence is as prevalent as it is. Like, that's something as simple as being told that you shouldn't be emotional, that you have to hide your emotions, that real men don't cry, actually is a complicating factor for why violence against women is so prevalent. You know, so we'll be talking about things like that. So we'll take a critical look at our culture and talk about strategies for not only how can we support men to change, but how can we support each other to change our culture and our communities.
I think it's probably pretty obvious, Ati, about why you were inspired to do this Men Stopping Violence training. And I think I've seen something that you've done in the past, but take us back and tell us what inspired you. How did you find MSV and how this all began?
Yeah. Well, AWARE has been doing both intervention programs with men that use violence for many years. I think we started in 2005, and more primary prevention efforts. And Men Stopping Violence is one of the only national organizations that has created this beautiful and brilliant model that works with all men and has this community accountability framework that we so deeply believe in. So locally, we are hosting and utilizing the Men Stopping Violence curriculum, Men at Work, for our weekly program. So men from the community join us once a week, and we're moving through this curriculum, and it's been really transformative for our staff and for the men that are participating. And so we wanted more, we wanted to learn more from Men Stopping Violence and create more opportunities for people across the community to deepen their understanding with us.
Lee, can you paint us a little picture of what the atmosphere will be like at this training in June? Give us a little snapshot of what it's like inside.
Okay, so it's not going to be the kind of training where you show up and you watch me and Langston walk through PowerPoints. It's going to be very interactive. We're going to rely on the expertise of the participants as much as the expertise of Langston and I. So it's going to feel like a workshop. People should show up and be ready to participate. We'll have a lot of discussion. We'll have some small group work, some large group work. There will be a PowerPoint or two, but there will also be a lot of interaction through every part of the training.
Remember when PowerPoints were, like, really cool? And if you had a PowerPoint, it's like, this is a cool presentation. Now we're like, we're just going to have a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, so this is June 19th through the 21st at Centennial Hall. Ati, if people want more
we've
info.
Actually changed the location, so it's going to be at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall.
Okay. Sounds good. If people want more information and sign up and register, is there a cost? How can they do all that?
Yeah, so you can go to AWARE's website to register, and it's www.awareak.org. You can call me for more information at 586-4092. There is a cost, and our doors are open to everyone who wants to participate. So we invite everyone with interest to join us, whether or not they have any financial resource to contribute. But registration is live on AWARE's website, and we hope to see you there. And the last thing I'd like to say is that while it's a three-day training, you are encouraged to attend all 3 days or sign up for 2 days of the training as well. So the first 2 days will be focused more on prevention, and then the last 2 days, the day in the middle will be shared, will be more on intervention. So okay. People could attend all 3 or 2 days, depending on their interest.
All right, Lee, before we let you go, anything else you'd like to add?
I would just say that if you want more information about Men Stopping Violence's work, we've got a great website, menstoppingviolence.org, that will share a lot more about all that we've talked about today and probably what you can expect at the training.
Okay, that training June 19th through the 21st at the Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall. Ati Nasia, Lee Giordano, thank you both for your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
I want to make a change for once in my life. Gonna feel real good, gonna make a difference, gonna make it right. As I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street with not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them?
to fade out Michael Jackson there. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 22nd, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, about 15 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is Robert Barr. He's the director of the CBJ Libraries, and also Sarah Lewis, board. She's on the board of the League of Women Voters, and we're here to talk about how to run for public office. Are we calling it a workshop?
It's a workshop, yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, Robert and Sarah. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so this is reality workshop in the Assembly Chambers on Saturday, June 17th, 9 to 1.
9 to 1, that's right. So this is our third year doing this workshop, how to run for local office. So when we say local office, we're gonna teach you how to run for the Assembly and how to run for the school board. So we really do focus on just local issues. That's important to know. Or local offices, rather. And we really want people to register. So you can go, the League of Women Voters is coordinating the registration, and you can go to their website. It's really easy. It's junolwv.org/run, and that will get you right there. There's a short little registration form, and you can get signed up and come learn what it is like to serve in local politics.
And it's interesting, before we went on the air, you were telling me you've had people take this who thought they wanted to run, and then they realized, hey, maybe this is not for me.
Yeah, that's right. And we view that as a positive outcome, too. So, you know, we want people to come to this and get excited and learn all the intricacies, you know, what they need to do to run for office, how to campaign, all that stuff. But also, if people think they want to run and they come and they learn, hey, this isn't for me right now, maybe at a later point, different phase of life sort of thing, that's great, too.
Okay. I think it speaks for itself, Sarah, but who would you encourage to attend this workshop?
Oh, goodness. Well, there's a lot of people out there I know who have this in the back of their head that someday they have it in them to run for office, to be a deeper and sort of more involved citizen in the community. And like Robert said, there's going to be different times in your life when that might work better than others. And I mean, myself, as someone with a young child, I hesitate, which is why I'm here on this side of the of the workshop at this point. But there are a lot of people, I think, who would be in a place in their lives where stepping up a bit more. And we've had growth in the membership of the League of Women Voters throughout Alaska and in Juneau. Juneau actually has, I think, one of the best membership numbers per capita for the state. And so we have a lot of involved people who have sort of been, I think, maybe preparing themselves for something like this over time. And I think this is a good time to find out more information.
Yeah. Okay. Without saying any names, I mean, unless you want to, how would you describe an effective assembly person? What kind of person makes a good assembly person or school board member?
Well, it's got to be someone that has the time, right? It's a big time commitment, especially to be on the assembly, but it's also a pretty significant time commitment to be on the school board, too. I think you certainly have to approach it from what's best from the community perspective, or in the case of the school district, what's best for the education of our community's children perspective. I don't necessarily think that going at it from a perspective of a single issue has been terribly successful in the past. So I would say that you really have to approach it from that sort of having that internal motivation to really serve your community. As Sarah was saying, this is kind of that big step that you can take if you want to serve your community. You know, we all have the responsibility to vote, and many of us go a bit further than that and serve on, you know, various boards and nonprofits and community outreach efforts. You know, there were one of the programs you had on earlier was talking about doing some cleanup of glass on Sandy Beach, you know, that kind of thing. Maybe you're involved in the Project Playground rebuild. You know, there's lots of different things that we do as citizens to contribute to our community. And this is just one of those things that, you know, if it's right for you, it's a pretty big thing that you can do.
Okay. This is Saturday, June 17th in the actual Assembly Chambers to get a feel for it.
It is.
From 9 to 1.
9 to 1.
Okay. Do people need to sign up in advance?
They do. So they need to sign up online. JunoLWV.org/run will get you to a very quick and easy registration form to fill out.
All right. I wish we had more time to talk about what makes successful people in the assembly and or on the school board. This has been a lot of fun. Sarah Lewis, Robert Barr, they will be organizing this workshop on Saturday, June 17th, 9 to 1 in the assembly chambers, How to Run for Public Office. Anything else either of you would like to add?
Well, just on the behalf of the League of Women Voters, getting educated about voting and community activities is an important thing. So come on out.
Come on out, yeah.
Listening to a Juno Afternoon. Scott Burton, your host, about 7 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now are two individuals who are a big part of the New Jack Project. Catherine Heumann, she's the project coordinator, and Sean Boiley with Northwind and is also the architect of record for the New Jack. What is the official name, Catherine, of the project that's happening across the street?
The project name is The New Jack.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, that's what we're calling it. It's a working name, so we're calling it The New Jack because it will be The New Jack, and this will eventually become known as The Old Jack, I guess. But we're calling it what it is, and the name may change when we actually have a building or have someone who's going to name it. But right now, it's The New Jack.
Okay. And there's a meeting tomorrow night. And, Sean, you want to tell us a little bit about that? Your partner, Hacker, is going to come up, and what are you all going to talk about?
Yeah, so our design architects and partners in this venture are Hacker out of Portland, and then we have a theater consultant, Shalik Collaborative out of San Francisco. And we have representatives of both offices in town right now. And after a number of meetings with stakeholders throughout the day, we'll be having a brief presentation and an open house. So anybody in the community who wants to come on down and take a look at what we've been doing is welcome to come in, check it out, leave some comments, and help the whole process along, because we can't do this without everybody here's voice.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Catherine, who would benefit from coming to tomorrow's meeting?
Well, anyone in Juneau who is interested in the project, lots of people have come to previous community meetings about the project and have given the architects feedback, so those people might especially be interested, but I think anybody in Juneau who may have used the Jack, and that is a lot of people who have had events over across the street at the Jack, or who have had their wedding there, or their retirement party, or their kid's birthday party. So come and see what it's going to look like in a couple years and how much more fun you will even have than you have now at the Jack.
What about a guy like me? I have this great idea at this point. I think we need a public media studio in the building. Is it too late for that?
I don't know, Catherine, what do you think? I'm sure there is space in the program right now that could be used as such at times.
What are you most proud of so far of the design as it's evolving? And this goes to either of you.
Oh, that's there's so much to be proud of. It's been such a treat and a pleasure to work with all of the architects and with the community to get to where we are. I mean, when they came in with the first sketches, they gave us options that included keeping the current building and then how they might work that into a new building. This is just a for instance. And the feedback from the community and the board and everyone was tear it down. So, but we went through that process. We went through looking at what it could look like. And so it's coming down. And there are the elements that are currently over there in the Jack, the gift shop, the gallery, the big main hall that we have the events in, will still be in this new building, plus a 300-seat theater and what we're calling an event studio, which is a smaller room that could be performances or it could be events, and a courtyard. Yeah. I'm missing something. Sound studio,
and of course all the supporting spaces of the art gallery, as well as the artist store and the cafe.
The cafe.
It's really going to be a neat little hub to this part of our community. I think what I'm excited about on the project is that it's really getting at a type of architecture that's a solid response to what people have been looking for here, as we've been, it's been presented to us. This is essentially the same team that brought you the Mendenhall Library a number of years ago that I think has been very successful out in the valley, and it's not by any means going to be the same building downtown. It's very different, but it's likewise responding to both landscape and environment and the people here, and that's what architecture is all about these days.
Okay, tomorrow night at the Jack, at the old Jack,
right,
at 5 p.m., come
right,
learn and talk about the new Jack. Off the top of your head, when might we break dirt on this?
Well,
spring of 18.
Break ground, yeah. I guess.
That's
not break dirt.
The schedule is essentially to try to get this under construction
spring
by next spring.
Wow.
1 year.
Yep.
Wow. And when might we be sitting in a theater seat?
About 14 to 18 months after that, depending on the schedule of things.
How exciting.
It's very exciting. And I'll just say one last thing, and that is that people, one thing that we heard over and over again from people in Juneau along the way was that they wanted this to give them what they already have over there. And that's what we're doing, a community hall with a theater.
And a whole lot more than that. That's a lot going on there.
Catherine Newman, Sean Boyle, thank you so much. Tomorrow night, 5 p.m. at the Jack.